So what kind of inspired this originally were this video on YouTube, and the guy was talking about how to keep players engaged in the game. So where this became interesting is Logan's Anytime Anywhere is like a sandbox world, but each game is run kind of like a one shot. And with all these guest GMs coming in this season, we're all running these independent stories. My idea was, how do you keep players engaged? How do you move things along versus a game that's open-ended? You can just pause the game and you pick up next time, but you can't really do that in this game. So there's a little bit of an urge to kind of railroad the players and make them follow a story sometimes. So the idea is, how do you balance that? And this video that we had watched, I thought he had a really interesting take on it, is that no matter what the story is that you have set up for the players, it should always be kind of told or explored from their point of view. So an example he gave is, you want the players to go to point A, but the players decide they're going to point B. So rather than just force them to point A, just adapt the way you're telling the story. And so that was kind of the idea, is how does Logan keep players engaged when he wants them to follow a certain story versus just let him do whatever the hell he wants? So that's kind of the idea around this, is player engagement, but how do you balance letting the players call the shot when you only have a 4 or 5 hour window to work? So what are your thoughts on that, Logan? Because I think you had some pretty unique ideas on how you do things, like your idea of festering. If a player wants to ignore point A and go to point B, that festers.
Yes. Well, I think that with players, like, I've noticed that Chris is able to do this. He kind of does Chris does it, and good players do it, kind of probing. He probes a bit to see, is this something Logan really has prepared, or is this just like background shit? Because Chris knows that if it's background shit and he goes, we're going over there, that it's gonna be like, yeah, the shit over there, and it's not gonna be really useful for him. So I think that first off, I do rely on good players being able to figure out where is the adventure. What they may not want to go for it right away, but they should at least have their finger on the pulse of what is the adventure, and probe around to figure out, is it worth going to check this out? But I think that the people who've game with me for a while, they have figured out kind of how I GM, so they can kind of pick that up. But if I have something and the players don't want to do it, then eventually shit gets worse, and that's the festering thing. It's like, well, if they checked it out, then simple, put a cap in this guy's ass, and then everything stops. But now, since they didn't, he has other people he's starting to recruit, and other people are going missing, or it just continues to build up.
Yeah, I think that was one of my biggest takeaways from you when we spoke last time. So what I've been wondering is, how do you address that if you know you're in a one shot? Somebody is going to ignore something. What are some examples, or an example of something you might do to kind of redirect the players to get them back on track? Because, if something festers, they might not ever find out. You know what I mean? Or do you hit the fast forward button? It's, I think maybe you have to be comfortable.
Actually, let's let somebody else answer it first, and let me ponder that a bit too.
Sure. So, although it's so I've GM'd a little bit, and what I would usually do is I would drop like little hints about, oh, or like as you're like investigating this, you think about this other piece of information, or oh, like I give like little hints of like the real adventure, or if it's something that might be in the media that they would see, like they're doing research and like, oh, well, you see a pop-up of this and they're talking about this. Not exactly like, oh, like so a good example of that is like in Cyberpunk time, like, so like someone got kidnapped and it was a famous person, say, well, then you like maybe a pop-up of like one of their like albums comes up, like, oh, hey, like this person still exists. Do you remember? And then continuing on, but not exactly like, oh, hey, you need to go, like, or getting a phone call from your fixer. Hey, did you get that person yet? Or nothing too nuts. Just enough to, because sometimes when you try to direct them, like you really want them to go over there and you're like slapping them that way, they'll just be like, no, I fucking like this over here even more now. Like, okay, dick. Go sit in the alley then and do whatever the fuck you want to do. And that's what we'll do for 5 hours if you really want to.
Yeah. But, and I imagine you, especially this type of game where you got 20 players that you're drawing upon every time, you know, occasionally you're going to run into something like that.
Oh, I'm sure. Like, I've played with some of the other guys, and they absolutely, like, I knew where the adventure was. I'm like, we really should go over here. And they're like, no, no. Yeah. And they just, like, want to go, okay.
Yeah. Spices.
Oh, my God.
Could you give them the quick summary on the spices, Chris?
Well, like, we had so much big stuff going on, and, like, I was playing with a couple people that like were definitely, they weren't like on the ball and like ready to do the bigger stuff, but it's, and I figured it's always better to get your feet wet in it a little bit, at least around the edges, get into it. Like we have shit we need to do because it's like game altering. We need to go do it. Whether it's you're high powered, low powered, wherever you're at, it needs to get done. And they just were like, well, we don't have enough money to continue, blah, blah, blah. And they were insistent on, like, going and, like, getting spices from, like, one of the shadows and bringing it to the other one. And I'm just like, really? Like, the place is going to fucking collapse soon. And you guys are talking about selling salt and pepper to some assholes in another shadow. Yay. I was like, if you want money that bad, like, who, like, cares? They're shadows. It's not real. Like, we'll just go fucking blow up a bank. I don't give a fuck. Let's get the fuck out and go over. No, it was all about spices. I'm like, fine. That's, like, whatever. When you got two other people that really want to do something, you just kind of got to let them do it after a while. And as much, and I'd be like, well, now can we go? They're like, oh, but. Like.
But how did I handle the spices thing? What did I do as a GM?
Well, you started like basically saying like, oh, well, like the spices got like harder to get and harder. And like, so now like getting like all these spices is near impossible and they're still wanting to do it. I'm like, that's almost as hard as what we're doing over here that matters. Like, come on, guys. It was but ridiculous.
The spices thing became this whole recurring motif. There was at least 7 or 8 games based on the spices.
Oh, God.
I've heard a lot of reference to it, but I don't really know much about it.
We needed money to upkeep all of our different bases and shit. I'm just like, it's not all that important, guys. There's other more important things to do. Hmm. We can figure it out. And to them, it was the most important shit ever. So I was like, all right, man. Okay.
Hmm. So what about you, Ralph? Do you you have any ideas as far as when players are totally losing the plot or dismissing it? And I think the idea that Logan had, that he's got a lot of experienced players. So a lot of times they know the cues to look for. And I know you've got a lot of experience like running your kids on games and stuff like that.
Right.
So you
right.
need to treat players like kids, right?
Neighbors. So for the last 5 years, I've had nothing but inexperienced players. Familiar with like all
they didn't become more experienced after 5 years. They stayed at the
it was very intermittent. And these were people who gamed. These are not gamers. So it was more of a social event. Let's have some cigarettes, let's have some booze and let's roll some dice.
Yeah.
And yeah, see this, you know, I used to have more hair and then I just kept beating my head and just you know. Yeah. But no, so what I would have to do is do layers of things. So, all right, you guys get to the town of Deadwood. You know, farmer complains about the goblins. Then, you know, the neighboring town complains about the goblins. And the goblins just come more and more and more. And one goblin would run into town. Next day, 2 goblins would run into town. Week later, 7 goblins are running into town. And eventually, you know, they'd get the point, like, hey, maybe we should go take care of the goblins, you know, when they're like coming in wave after wave after wave every day, you know. And no, I have to hurt them definitely. But you know, the whole layering thing too is I would leave clues. So as an example, let's say they found a book. Oh yeah, there's a book on the wizard's table, and they would ignore it and just wander off. And then they're like, you know, they might be on another mission. I'm like, yeah, you see that same symbol, but you don't know where you know it from. You know, everybody would fail their dice rolls. So they still have no clue that the symbol on the wizard's book was the same one as what they're looking at. And it's just horrible, you know? So you just got to layer things and keep reminding them is what I come up with.
To get back to answering your initial question, now that I've had some time to think, Jay, I think that how I do it is different than how I would do it if I was a guest GM. For me, if the players don't go on the adventure I want them to, then as long as they're going on something else that I've got some idea on, or even if I don't, there may be enough momentum in the world to just carry it. But if I was like a guest GM, I would start them off in the middle of the adventure I had prepped, you know, in media res. So it's like, I might even start them off in like a briefing room. It's like, all right, so you guys, we're really happy that you've taken this contract. The player's like, I wonder where the fuck I am. What am I wearing? This is interesting. And yeah, and the guy continues briefing them in the background. They're like, do we know this guy? I don't know. He seems to know us, you know, and just continue on, or have it more subtle where they wake up and there's all the clues are in the camp because they've been gathering, or somebody's been gathering clues, and then it's all there and they can go through and go, apparently we're looking for where these goblins are coming from. This is our, you know, we have like I hate goblins t-shirts and shit that we're all wearing, so this may have something to do with it. I don't know. Yeah,
make it painfully obvious.
Yeah, cause you, if you're a guest GM, you've got 5 hours and you may only GM once in 3 months, so you don't have a lot of time to hope that the players go after your adventure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think that was one of the things I had heard too, is start out in the action somehow, like in a briefing, in combat, you know, in a situation where they have to escape or something. You know, they don't have time to start comparing notes or ask who they are, where they're from. You know, they're just, because that's one thing you run the risk of, especially the way you run your game, is people generally wake up in the room, or they have a general sense of their buddy being nearby. Mm-hmm. And there's so much potential just to spend an hour or two figuring out who these people are, briefing each other. In fact, you had told me one time there was a game where they probably spent 4 hours just briefing each other. You didn't even need to be there. And they were having a good time. So, I mean, you could totally run that risk where you kind of do need to railroad them sometimes, or just put them in a situation where they don't have a choice but to react.
Well, for people that are running pretty much just a one-shot, I mean, if somebody was GMing like twice a month for 3 months, then you've got a lot more time to do stuff and make your own little realm and stuff like that, so the PCs have more free reign.
Yeah, well, I think this game seems to be a good blend of both, where you can run your one shot, and if you have a good time, people like it, you can always make a sequel.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll do better than Hollywood sequels do.
If I could chime in here for a second, so what I was planning for my one shot is, yes, it's a one shot. I think everybody as a player is good enough to know that it's treated like a one shot. You're going to follow the adventure path, whatever that first hook is you're going to go with. And like you said, Logan, it doesn't matter who's playing with you. They're going to be experienced players. You don't have any, you know, besides myself that I know of, you don't have any brand new players starting up this season, but they're all seasoned gamers as of right now. I mean, unless they're going to join in the next month and get going. But, with that being said, though, I'm still including foreshadowing for a continuation. So, you know what? Any notes you take or any handouts you might get, which we don't really do anymore, there's going to be some relevance to the sequel. You know what I'm saying? And so I think it's important. Treat it, yes, it's a one shot. If the players are having so much fun on the opening scene and we spend 5 hours on the opening scene and everybody's having a great time, successful.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. Although we do have notes and stuff. There are plenty of notes and things that go out to the players in my game. Whether they keep them or whatever, I don't care. That's up to them.
Yeah. I'll have to figure that out for the Roll20 side of things, though. But, yeah.
Well, even just the the use of the in-game board, you know, with a pool of 20 players that might not ever actually interact face-to-face, I think is a pretty neat layer to the game where notes and things like that, and then the use of the wiki, if people want to use that, there's like actual information on there that could be useful to a player. I think that's kind of an interesting layer to the game. So I had asked you before also about timing. Do you guys ever use any kind of timing in your games? If you're kind of storyboarding out what the game's going to look like, these are the potential scenes I might have. There's going to be four or five encounters in my one shot. Do you try to come up with an approximate time? Because I know you said, Ralph, for example, they might spend 4 hours in your opening scene. But do you ever say, well, I think the PCs will probably spend 30 minutes here, 30 minutes here, 2 hours here, and so on. And do you ever think about it that way?
No. I will come up with, let's just say, one scene an hour. Because there's a lot of in between, there's a lot of thinking, talking amongst the players, things like that. So I'm going to have basically 5 to 10 scenes ready to go for the one shot, but it's created in such a way that I could omit any one of those scenes and not injure the story.
Sure. That makes sense. So what about you, Logan? Do you feel like if one scene that you had put a lot of thought into is going to be ignored, do you take elements of that and just insert it to another scene on the fly?
I might, or I might save up the scene for when another group goes back after it. That's because, like, for example, there was an ice tower that I know Chris loves so much. He just wanted to grab the ice tower like Donald Trump does to any flag or pussy he can find. And
I mean, it wasn't that bad.
you are not well pleased with it as it was going, although you did get a good game of golf in on it. That was kind of a I built it up and had some stuff happening with it, and if one group didn't go to it, eventually another group will go to it, and if they didn't go to it, somebody else would, and if they didn't go to it, shit might eventually start happening with it, you know, on its own. I think when you're putting in a lot of GMing hours, you've got a lot more leeway for things like that.
So Logan, how much of your game do you feel is kind of player-driven story versus stuff that you are preparing, kind of just one-shot modules, or do you find that a lot of your content that you're creating is a reaction to the player's decisions?
That's a good question. I'd like to have Chris answer that. Dang.
I would say it's more Logan's creations. Like, there's been a couple things that the like, and then whatever the players get into, he'll usually expand upon. I do know, and then a couple people have had some more personal plots, like Yana's had some good plots because she really got into that. And then what was kind of cool is then, like, a couple other people helped with that too. Like, I got into it a little bit, and then Matt got into it, so then we helped her, and so did Pete. And then we really all kind of, like, that actually became, like, a lot of season one was basically centered around her stuff. So, and then that built up.
Yeah, I think I know that story. I think I had heard the finale of that story. It was a really good one to listen to.
The problem with the player-made plot for me is that I'm not good at just like if Ralph says I want to become the Goblin King, for example, unless something that he's doing really inspires something or makes my brain go idea, then you know I can't just say I'm going to sit down and write a mod based on that. You know, there has to be something that inspires me about it. With Yana's plot, where she decided to essentially grab a replica and of herself and reprogram it to love her. That I was like, what will happen? And then that created all kinds of, and it may have gone past season one, and then they ended up having a kid somehow, you know, just weird shit happened because of this, and it just kept going and going, and there's still elements of that that are going. So if somebody has a wild enough idea, then their stuff starts, I start flowing out of that. But if it's rather pedestrian stuff, then you know it may not go anywhere for me.
Sure. What about you, Ralph? The games you run, do you feel that they're very player driven, or do you feel it's more just story driven?
It's story driven. I tried to do, when I would run for this group, I would give each individual person their very own personal plot line. So it would be focused, and then they would feel important because they're new and experienced gamers. And I would have a sandbox small town / adventure with a few different things going around the periphery. And their personal plot would come to them. And so I would try to touch each one of them, like one a season. So, or one, I'm sorry, not one a season, one a week. So like Jason, this time somehow your personal plot might get tied in. Next week it might be Logan's, the following week, because we played once a week. You know, next week would be Chris's. And so then you knew, hey, my turn's coming up and something's going to be happening.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you're setting the expectation that something's going to kind of be tailored to their character a little bit.
Absolutely. Whether it's like a family quest line or birthright or just anything. Yeah. You know, if somebody's like, I really want to get that magic bow of, you know, awesomeness. Well then, you know, I'll tailor that storyline for them, you know?
Right. What about you, Chris? Do you feel like you just try to run it more like a story, a module, or base it off your players?
It's really, to me, whenever I was running, it was about like, it really depended what the characters, what the players did. Otherwise I would have like my mods ready, and I didn't want to invest too much unless they wanted to. The more they invested, the more I would invest. And if they didn't, like if they just wanted to continue just doing these adventures and that's really all they cared about, well then that's all I would do. Cause it's kind of like, you know, if they got really into something, and then like maybe I would probe a little bit into that. And if they were still into that, even if it seemed mundane, then I would try to like expand upon it.
Yeah.
Chris, see if you can keep from bouncing your camera. I'm getting seasick.
I passed you.
It's not his camera. I do have a question for Chris, though, kind of related to this. This is pertaining to Logan's World. So as you've gotten to play for several seasons and multiple players coming through the door, how does it flow with different, I understand there's different calibers of players, but also different calibers of characters. So let's say, you know, Chris is on his storyline and, you know, he's at the pinnacle of the group. How does it flow when you have a couple newer players or an intermediate character with you? Does it keep flowing all right, or do you have any hiccups?
Oh, there's definitely, like, the whole, the spice thing is a perfect example of that, where it was getting close to the end of one of the seasons, and the shit was hitting the fan, and they just wanted to make money, and to me, that was really rough. But, like, we still had fun with it all, and ended up, and then, so I let them have that. And the next time we were all together, I was like, okay, look, we're good now. We need to go do this. And then if they didn't want to at that point, I would just start, like, bulldogging on my direction. I'd be like, if you want to go do that, I'll see you later. And I would go, and they'd be like, shit. And then they would start following me. So that at least was, you know, it worked out that, you know, nicely in that way. But like, I would just like my character, not Chris, my character would get more and more angry until they kind of noticed and were like, oh, and I was like, And then
the really dangerous sociopath that's with us seems angry for some reason. I wonder why.
Like I actually would start acting a little bit more reckless and more reckless until we were doing the things that we needed to do. So that was like my way of like getting them, and they started seeing it, and which was good. And then they were like, oh, and then they saw what I was wanting to do, and they were like, oh, and I was like, yeah.
That does segue nicely into a question that I came up with when Ralph asked his, and at least two of you guys can answer this, because the style of campaign I've got now, where it's essentially 20 some people and we're pulling three at a time, it's a different kind of campaign than most people are used to. So in this kind of campaign, I'll first address it to Chris and then Jay, and then if Ralph wants to chime in this kind of campaign, what makes a good player?
The first thing that comes to mind is just adaptability. Mm. I mean, you have to be willing to go with it just because the story could potentially go in any direction. There's kind of a you need to have a good sense of humor, I think
the player, the character,
the definitely the players. I think the question is what makes a good player, right? Not I think you gotta have a sense of humor and the ability to adapt, because if you're not ready for Logan's Kentucky fried brain,
you're not gonna understand what's going on. Gemini, so anything could happen.
Yes, exactly. You never know when Big Jim Slade is going to crash through a wall, or, you know, you might be flipping channels through interdimensional cable. I mean, it's just that crazy. So those are the first things that come to my mind.
I would say that being open-minded about what's going to happen, which is kind of like the adaptability, kind of letting go of any other role-playing trope that you've like, oh, I play D&D, so this is what you do. No. Like, and we've actually gone out of our way to break that of a lot of people as well. Yeah. 'Cause they've come in with it thinking like, oh, this is a dungeon crawl, or, oh, we're just going to go kill the bat. No.
Yeah. There's
much more to it. But this definitely gets people, this campaign and the way that Logan runs definitely makes for better players. It gets weeded out really quick. They either stick around and learn how to be adaptable. They stick around and learn that there's more to gaming than just, you know, picking up your plus five, going into a dungeon and killing a bunch of goblins.
Yeah, it's not a, a lot of role-playing games are really just kind of turn-based strategy combat games.
And yeah.
This is definitely much different. No. So I think a lot of people come into that, that's their background or their experience or approach to gaming. So I think if they're open-minded, willing to try something new, that's going to be big.
Ralph, you got something on this? I mean, I know it's been a while since we've gotten a game together.
Sure. No, I'm sure we'll just fall right back into it. But that's why, I'm excited about this, because I have not been challenged at my level of a player, you know, with my current pool. So I'm looking forward to it. That's why I tried to create a good support character that can fit with any type of group of individuals, whether on the up and up or down and seedy, and just be able to go with the flow. And just, I want to be able to support the other players until I get my hook into something. And then, aha, which I don't even know if it'll happen this season, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. That's kind of how I feel with my character too. It's, you know, just someone that can come in and basically assist in any situation. I think that's what's cool about this game is a lot of people, when you're playing some kind of role-playing game, usually you're the hero, the superhero, you know, and the middle of all the action. What's interesting about a game like this, where you got a pool of 20 people all doing different things, is you really can get those kind of layers where players are kind of supporting what the other players are doing. I think that's kind of interesting, motivating.
I got something you'd mentioned, Jay, the interdimensional cable. This is the first campaign that I have had to extensively figure out, not just what's in the newspapers that might be relevant to the story, what's on fucking TV, because the players might go and randomly watch TV.
Yeah.
And so there's been at least 50 different TV shows in the campaign that I've had to figure out.
That's pretty interesting.
It's different.
I love all that little kind of stuff that can be like little Easter eggs, you know, like go Bobcats.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I remember the players were in some other zone, and it had been a while since Handy was brought up, which was a show that a lot of them were actually actors and actresses in. And it was on TV, and they're like, oh, God, I hate this show. And people are like, yeah, it's really cheesy, but I can't stop watching it. They're like, oh, I'll stop you.
Was that part of Red Carpet, or was that its own zone?
Oh, no, that was, it became its own zone briefly as like another cameo. Yeah. But it was part of Red Carpet.
That's funny. So what – talk a little bit about – so this idea with the guest GMs, you said people can basically make any kind of version they want of an existing Logan campaign. So imagine people running their games. What is the ideal way – or an ideal way to kind of link a one-shot to an existing game without trying to force it too much? Would it be something like an Easter egg, or do you have any ideas on how to connect a one-shot to the game?
I'm going to let Chris take that first while I ponder some more.
I would say that with there being so many different zones and with, like, that we've seen, and like we've even have hints of some of the shadows that we've traveled through. So it's really easy. Like, say, so like there's that zone, the old Wild West zone that kind of died out, that cause, yeah. And it's all winter there. You could, right. I could easily see going there because the players do go there a lot. So you could easily go there and like something weird could be in the distance or something. And then all of a sudden you're in like the Arctic Russia and paranoia again, and everybody now has mustaches.
That was awesome. I have not had a day like today since yesterday.
I still remember when we had that poor new player walk in, and the first thing they see is everybody sitting around the table wearing like paper beards and mustaches and acting like old, bitter Soviet guys.
Yeah,
that just blew their mind. I don't remember if that's when they left or not, but
yeah, that was a good one.
Now
I agree. I was kind of thinking that too, Chris. When I was initially thinking about the ideas, I was like, you can literally do anything you want, you know. It's yeah. And I think Logan made a comment about even if you want to base it like a mirror image of one of my zones, it can just be a different shadow or version of that zone, you know, different timeline. So I think that's one of the cool things about the game is there's a lot of creativity. You can really do whatever you want. I mean, you got a zone full of Smurfs, for Christ's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking horny.
The funny thing is the players all hate that zone with all the Smurfs, and they've been there at least a half a dozen times. They just keep going. It's like, we have to go there. And the other players are like, no, we don't.
Well, yeah. There's a major thing there. Like the, I mean.
Yeah, right. I got dragged through it on my first game, actually.
But yeah, I mean, like name any comic if you want, like if, because I'm not personally into anime at all, but if somebody wanted their zone to be all anime and like when you go there, all the characters look like anime and they all have these really tiny mouths and these fucking huge eyes and shit, you could totally do that in the game. And you're normal looking when you're not in that zone, but if you wanted to run that kind of stuff, that would make it very unique to you. And then like if I wanted to have an Easter egg of that in the part of the campaign that I run, I would like have like an anime magazine or something laying there, and it's got like Chris's anime face on it going, oh, you know, something like, you could have whatever kind of weird shit you wanted with that.
Mm-hmm. So, we got probably about 10 minutes left before I got to jump off. Any other questions or anything you guys had that you wanted to bring up? Or any topics you wanted to discuss?
I've got one. Combat in this game, it's very different. By the way, if you two want to keep going after Jay jumps off, because he's all busy and professional and shit and that. Then
I'm good to go.
We can keep going. Cool. But combat in this game, because I know I feel bad that Ralph hasn't gotten a game a bunch in this, because they have more input, although he's seen the way I do combat. But Chris, could you give a rundown of how the combat in this game is different than the combat that, like Jay said, is normally like turn-based and,
Well, a lot of the combat in like D&D and everything, because I've not that I've played a whole ton of D&D, but like just recently I have played some, and it's just so mechanical. Like everybody metagames everything. It's not like, I don't know. Maybe that's also the player's thing there too. I don't know. Because when when someone's casting a fireball in D&D, and like anybody could at any time just be like, I do this. And it's like, so that just makes everything different right away. But like in D&D, this guy's going to cast fireball. Oh, and this guy's actually casting this spell. So I'm going to do this, or I'm going to stay back over here. And it becomes and that's why it takes so much longer to do combat in those kind of systems. Where with this one, it's, you kind of have to have fast thinking, and then you have, you always time it down. If we're taking too long, you're like, you got 5, 4, 3, what are you doing? Okay, next. Yeah.
You stand there looking confused. Next.
Yep.
Mm.
Jay, do you have any thoughts on combat?
I think just the big thing that's different from like D&D games I've played is, the theater of the mind. And I think right. It is fast paced. But I think that's probably more of a GM thing, maybe not a game thing. I think it's really up to the GM if he's on top of it and kind of lighting the fire, or whether he's letting people wait until it's their turn to think about what they do for a minute. And all of a sudden they open the book and they want to figure out how something works. I like the idea of saying, look, it's your turn, go. You basically got 5 or 10 seconds to think about it. Otherwise, I'll take your turn for you, or you just stand there looking confused. So, yeah, that's one of the things I like about how Logan's style of running it. He's very good at keeping the timing and the momentum going. He knows when things are crawling to a halt and when you just need to skip somebody and move on to the next person. But the card aspect of the combat I like. That's one thing I think I like about this system versus D&D is you've got the hero points and you got the cards. It adds an extra layer to the game, I think, makes it a little bit more interesting. Sometimes really dramatic moments can just be spoiled by just a poor die roll, so it just seems like kind of a waste. I like that there can be an extra variable that can help in those clutch moments. So I think that's one of the things I like about combat in this game.
Ralph's gotten to play with the cards and the hero points Yes. and stuff.
And so here's the biggest thing that I'm glad you kept, but I dropped that I wish I kept, was the random environmental changes of the cards each round of combat. What is approved?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going first? Because it's possible to have the, villains go first in the next 3 rounds in a row, and, setbacks and stymies and all that good things. And, to me, versus that, like
that initiative
makes it very dynamic and not stagnant.
Well, with the combat, one of the things I always hated in other games is everybody would roll for their individual initiative every round, and that just immediately slows it down to a crawl. And it doesn't matter if Ralph goes first and Chris goes second, and it doesn't matter, because Chris could be like, well, I want to, and Ralph's like, hold on, let me do something first. Yeah, I mean, that's okay. He could do that, but normally it doesn't matter who goes first. It's like, are the good guys or the bad guys going? That's all that really matters. Everything else is just dick measuring. My character's so fast, I always go first.
Which, like, a good example of how Logan's combat is with the system is, like, when I'm in combat in Logan's world, I have to be right here, and I have to be very attentive to what's going on. So I was playing D&D with Seth, and he'd be like, all right, combat. And I'd be like, we'd all roll our initiative, and I'll be like, all right, this is where I'm at. I'll be back. And I would literally go, make some coffee, come back, and it wouldn't be my turn yet.
God damn.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad it's on hiatus now. I'm probably not going to play anymore. Like, whatever. Like the only real reason I was playing is because I was playing with Brian Slocum and Seth. And that's it. I was just like, well, it was a good socialization, and we only played for like 3-4 hours at a time. So, And I would literally be on the, like, just on the internet or on Facebook at the same time. So it was that's about it, engaging as it was.
Sorry, I know Jason has to go, but I've got a 2-minute fast story that will kind of summarize that first question you had about players and one shots. Logan and I were at a convention. And it was paranoia. We were all started out in a room. Whenever anybody would leave the room, no matter what they would do, whether they would touch the computer or anything, for some reason they would get killed. Paranoia, you go through a lot of clones and you die a lot, right?
Yeah.
4 hours at a convention, sitting in a hotel room, the guy's like, okay, well, the session's over. You guys were the worst group of players I've ever had. Why didn't you just follow the yellow line? So, because we had to get to a subway. He never told us there was a yellow line painted on the floor. He never mentioned that we're all wearing yellow jumpsuits and are supposed to follow the yellow line. There was no briefing. We just started out in a room, bunch of clones. You know, I try to look up on the computer. Where do I go? You must be a communist traitor. You know, a bunch of guards come and blast us. And we did that for 4 hours, and we never left the room. We never got anywhere. So in a one shot, you got to be careful, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds like in a one shot, you have to be ready to kind of push the players. It sounds like the failure to, I forget the Logan term he used, immediate res, you said? Mm-hmm. Like in media res? The way
oh, in media people. Res, yeah. In the midst of the action. Hmm.
So it sounds like, you know, in a situation like that where he was treating it more like an escape room, but didn't want to describe the room.
Correct.
He was ready to run a different kind of game, it sounds like.
Well, there's a lot of GMs that run a very adversarial game where unless you ask, is there anything on the floor? He's not going to tell you, even if there's a dead body you're tripping over, or there could be like 8 ninjas in the room. But unless you ask, are there any creatures in the room? He's not going to mention the ninjas who are going, oh, hey. It's like you're suffering from blindness unless you say, well, gosh, is there anything on the walls? Oh, these amazing tapestries and shit. Wouldn't I notice that just walking into the room?
No, it's Zork. You got to actually put that in the right syntax in or you'll get nothing.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, I think my idea with just to kind of go back versus the one-shot idea, how I've been thinking about it as a combination of things that you guys have said is I've kind of got the ideas for the different scenarios and encounters they can be in, but it doesn't really have to go in any particular order. And if you just want to be ready to kind of move this story or this part of the story to this scene. If I'm thinking this might happen in scene 4, it's easy enough to just adapt it on the fly and make it scene 2. I think just having some random ideas or having an idea where the people are going to go, not putting too much over preparation to each one of those scenes, but just giving yourself enough room to juggle them however you see fit based on what the players do is going to be kind of my approach. As I'm thinking about it, it's kind of like a timeline, but it can all be moved around in different order very quickly.
That's actually how I used to GM, is I used to like make a time, like not a timeline, but like kind of like a bubble map, Logan. And and just like this is the different things that are gonna, that can happen. So depending on where they go is what happens.
Yeah. Or outline. Well, that's the word I was looking for.
Timeline. Outline. Exactly. Yeah. I would have like an outline.
Kind of bullet points, and then all right, well now this section can go up here because they decided to go this way.
Well, something that I always try to do is I always have what I call three routes to victory. Because there's way too many different games or modules or whatever. It's like this, unless the players get this one specific clue, they cannot proceed. They are basically going to just be at a complete impasse. They're going to be stuck. Nothing will happen unless they get this one specific clue. And real life is a lot messier than that. Like if somebody's been kidnapped, the logical thing to do, like for police, is they reconstruct the last 24 hours of somebody's life, and they try to figure out like all the phone calls, social media, all this shit that's happened. But if somebody got kidnapped out in nature, for example, the players may not come up with that. They may say, let's get some tracking dogs in. This is another good potential thing, you know, because then you got the tracking dog. It wouldn't work in a city, obviously, but you know, if you're out in the country and you get something with the smell, you know, so there has to be at least for anything that's a major clue, at least three different ways to get it, because otherwise your whole game just fucking stops. And with certain clues, I don't even have any roles. Like if I'm converting a mod, for example, and they're like, this is the major clue, then I'm either going to have it be like a spot at full, because everybody in the game has amazing spot hits because they use it all the time. Or there might not be any role. It's like this weird device sitting on the table and shit like that, you know, et cetera. So.
Yeah, I like that idea. Just so as you're thinking of your ideas, you're also thinking of how the different ways they can discover it.
Or the different ways they could solve it. Like, any time that it's like, well, what would I do? I try to come up with three different solutions, because if I can come up with three different solutions, I mean, yeah, I know all the pieces and shit, but if I can come up with three different solutions for it and the players can't come up with any, then that's kind of on them, you know? Yeah,
that makes sense. All right. Well, I'm going to get going. It was nice chatting with you guys.
Mm-hmm. Good seeing you again, Jay.
Chris, yeah. You got to try to get the fourth off. Come back to us.
I'm so excited to play with Chris, too. You know, I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Later, see you.
Take care, Jay.
I got a new question to keep it going while you guys also think of new questions. This one's for both of you. Like as a GM, what is an important either thing you do or trait you have to have or something like that that you think is important for a GM to have? Like, for example, one of the things that it's not a popular thing, but I think a GM has to be a little bit cruel. Just a little bit. Not majorly overly cruel, but you kind of have to, if there's an apple, it doesn't have to have a razor blade in it, but maybe half a worm. You know, because otherwise, the reason is I've seen too many GMs and it becomes like a Monty Hall campaign or a you know, oh, you've got a pile of treasure that you're sitting on top of, like you've just taken a giant golden shit, you know, and all this, and everything's easy, and the players don't feel like they've earned anything, you know, they don't feel like they struggled for it. They felt like I pull a lever, and gold flows into my room. Hey, I win. So, Ralph, what do you think?
I agree with the slightly being cruel. And, you know, I think you also have to have a level of empathy or be able to read your players.
That's a good one.
You know, because are they at the point of mentally breaking, or are they really enjoying it and just concentrating, you know?
Oh, yeah. Chris, what you got?
That's actually what I was going to say, like being able to read the players and see where they're at.
Well, you can't say that now because you already said it.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, the whole mentally breaking thing, the else I could think about was the haunted house with the druid in the fireplace.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, my fucking God.
That broke so many motherfuckers. It didn't break people as much as the Mask of Nyarlathotep campaign, though. That one fucking destroyed groups.
But, I mean, I had fun with that one, though, with both of them. And then it was fun to watch other people mentally break as I went on the haunted house multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Just sit there and watch them going, so, what do you think it is? And they're like, I've got so many handouts. I don't know what to do. Ah. Oh, I love that fucking. That is, to this day, my favorite mod.
I've incorporated it and used it a few different times, even in different genres. It works great in fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, yeah. You know?
But I don't know. I think there has been a lot of player breakages and stuff, but these days it's just, for my campaign, it's not something that everybody's going to like. Some people want a very different flavor of gaming. For a lot of people, I've heard like D&D called the McDonald's of gaming. I thought that was rather neat. But they want the power trip. And the power trip in this game is a lot smaller. Like, for example, Doc Fulton, powerful dude. But if somebody sat there and shot him a couple times with a pistol, it could fuck him up. It could kill him. You know, so it's a lot different than, you know, the guy who gets shot with a heavy crossbow and fails to notice, thought a mosquito got him and rides off.
He has too many Happy Meals, clearly.
Yes.
I think your game also draws, and I know Chris and I from this pool, is at least I feel more rewarded with the treasures of knowledge and gaining, you know, bits and pieces of the story and putting it all together, you know, and that's where you excel as a GM, you know, so you've got a huge multiverse, if you will. I am so excited to come in as a fresh player. You know, it's like, I recognize the colors I'm looking at, but I don't know the painting, you know what I mean? Right. And so... That's what I'm excited about, is the discovery.
Well, Ralph actually leads into the Eric question. As a player, what's an important trait to have?
Well, I think that goes back to what Jay had talked about with the whole open-minded and being able to see more than try to look past everything too. It's not like everything's not on the surface, looking like a little bit deeper. If you don't look deeper, especially in your campaign, like there's sometimes little clues about other things going on. And if they're not looking more than just what's right in front of them, they're going to miss so much. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I love it when you're with a newer guy and he's like, oh, this. We go up. We go. And you're like, think about what you just said. Try again. And you're like, it's obvious he's the main bad guy. And you're like, no. Ralph, what do you think for a good attribute for a player to have?
Not getting discouraged. Everybody can be useful, you know? And if I was to come into play right now with Doc, and Doc's a well-experienced, you know, character, and I'm inexperienced, you know what? I don't care if I don't have 100s in anything, because you know what? I could roll ones all day long and I could outshine Doc Fulton on a bad day.
Well, that's true. Well, plus the skill set, like with picking on D&D some more, you're like, I've seen really lame GMs where like everybody else is eighth level. you're first. Like, you're going to stick around to eventually catch up. Like, their game is going to run long enough for you to catch up. In my experience, this is a fairy tale. Although there's a lot of people out there, it's like, my game's been running for 27 years. Yeah. Not one I've ever played in. But in this game, since it's skill-based, like Jason's character came in, and people are like, so what can you do? And he's like, bargaining. And, you know, I'm the salesman. They're like, oh, we've been waiting for a sale. oh, come with me. We have things for you to do because we don't know anything about this stuff. And they just, they immediately had like special shit for him to do.
So, yeah.
Lots of it.
Well, that's also what's really cool is like anybody can really be anything, and there will be a use for it eventually, or we'll find uses for it. It's too many people just want to be like combat guys, and it's like,
I always tell people, have like a combat skill. Like, I can shoot a pistol, I can use a club. I haven't spent many points in it, but if combat breaks out, I'm not just going to be sitting there hiding behind going, sweet, save me. Yeah.
Carry me.
Jeez. I think he was good for something.
Well, for people watching, Ralph back in the day had played pretty much like a brick, a beefcake named Suede, who was like really strong, and he had some air skills. But there was some other guy who I don't know if his character, he made him to be useless, or if he had no confidence in him, or all the above.
He broke both of his legs on the adventure because we had to cross over a mountain. First he broke one, and then it was, you know, Suede saved me, and so I was dragging him along, and then eventually he broke his second leg, and then it turned into Suede carry me.
that was fucked up. But yeah. Even though it's been a lot of years since we've gotten a game together, Ralph, your characters are still remembered in the game and referenced to, and even
I know
some have become NPCs and shit.
I've heard. I'm excited. I'm honored by that. You know, I think that's pretty cool to do. You know, and
well, that's the great thing about running for so many years, like. Some guy on one of the forums was bitching about like old GMs and shit like that. And I'm like, what? Oh, old GMs are great because they got a lot of campaign stuff that they're pulling from. They got life experience. Some of them do. Some of them just went through a boring ass life for the last 30 years and didn't do shit. But you can, especially if you've got like a long campaign, then you have Easter eggs and stuff that keep popping up and things.
I've used Chris's characters as NPCs in my games. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had Cherry, like when he was the fixer, when he went through his fixer phase. I had the Blue Mage, definitely used him. Big Tongue, you know, identifying items for money. You know what I mean? It's awesome to have that kind of, you know, that you could pull from.
Oh, yeah. Let's see, Chris.
I've actually used Sion and Nero.
Right. He was a wild one. I don't know. Do you guys have some more topics and shit?
So I've got one here. I kind of addressed Chris's. Now this one's more directed towards Logan. So You know, out of your pool of 20 players, you've got 3 players coming in from, and let's say they play on different days. And now they've all got different ideas on their topics or what they want to try to cover this session.
Uh-huh.
How do you juggle that if they've got 3 different topics, 3 different calibers, and they're not agreeing? You just let them sit there?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I will let them fucking figure it out. Because the one directive I always give players is be generous to each other. You know, kind of like actors and actresses are generous. They don't try to upstage each other and stuff.
Right.
And the caliber of players that we've got in this game is really very high. We don't have anybody who's a dickhead. we have some people that may wish to do unwise things, especially when Chris is around, and they will suggest courses that cause Chris to face palm, for example, repeatedly. And unfortunately, the people who do that are not really good at reading people. And so when Chris is like, they don't understand that this is, they're not reading the room and going, or we could do this other thing where Chris, we could do that, because he's trying to be nice to them and not just reach through the monitor and kill them. But no, if three different players get pulled in and they're all wanting to do different shit, then they're going to have to figure out what's important now, because what sounds cool for them to do. Because even if it's not important, that's one of the things that I'm hoping that people continue to do on the in-game board is, like, for example, let's say you guys were playing with Jay. And you were like, oh, we're going to go after this thing here, but this other thing seems to be time sensitive. Then I'm hoping that you'll get on the in-game board and go, hey, specific person, because I see on the schedule you're up next, can you go handle this thing? Because we wanted to, we didn't have time, because we wanted to go off to the happy lands or whatever. Can you go sort that for us? Because we think it's time sensitive. Because I've noticed if people say, can somebody go do this? Nobody will, because everybody's like, oh, I don't want to step on anybody else. I don't want to, so nobody ends up doing it. So you have to ask somebody specifically to do it.
Yeah. See, I don't have access to the in-game boards yet, but that's why I'm trying to also play somebody who's happy to support whatever's going on. You know, and let them.
Chris, how do you deal with it when there's three different players and you're one of them, and everybody's got very different shit that they want to do? Or how have you seen it solved in the past?
Well, usually it really depends on what's the most important thing. If things can be sacrificed to do other things, like, unfortunately, like John came in, and me and Pete hadn't played in a very long time together. And we both had a wealth of new knowledge. Poor John was like banging his face against his table, because that was our 4-hour briefing of each other. Like, we just briefed each other for 4 hours on what was going on. And I thought he was going to lose his mind. And then that's why we went off and did whatever he wanted as soon as it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted to go kill some shit or do something fun for him. And I was like, well, all right, we'll go do that. Let's go. We'll get you some shit. And then he was happy. And I was like, okay, good. But, like, it all really depends on, like, things that need to be done, things that the players want to do. Like, if there's more players that want to do it, of course, that's what you're going to, mm-hmm. you got to compromise. As long as everybody's willing to compromise over time, that's what really, but when you start doing, like, the same thing just for them every time, that's when it's like, and you got to kind of be a dick and kind of push back pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Especially like when it's about the campaign, and that's, I was talking about, like, basically forcing them to and onto the rails and be like, no, we need to go this way. I'm going this way. If you don't want to come, I'll talk to you later. But that was when, like, we were coming up against, like, a lot of the, like the mid season, like, big plot lines that needed to happen.
Yeah. Do you have an answer on that also, Ralph, or?
What was the pure question there? Because I was kind of listening and I was thinking.
What's your question?
Which one was it? What did I even ask? My brain was already going on to the next one.